Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world. Today on the program, you will hear stories from Mario Ritter and Katie Weaver. Dan Friedel will tell us what's trending today, and Anna Mateo will bring us this week's health report. But first, here is Mario Ritter.
In a little over 1 year, Chinese-based development banks have made $3 billion available for projects in a number of countries. Yet some observers question whether the banks will provide support for China's One Belt, One Road program. It seeks to expand trade between Europe and Asia, similar to the ancient Silk Road linking China and the West. The new banks are the New Development Bank and the Asian Infrastructure Investment Bank, known as the AIIB. The New Development Bank was the idea of China and four other countries: Brazil, Russia, India, and South Africa, a group known as BRICS. The New Development Bank says its members have equal voting power in the bank, which is based in Shanghai. The AIIB is based in Beijing. China has the largest share of voting power in the bank. 56 other countries are also members. They include Britain, France, and Germany, three non-Asian allies of the United States. Jin Li-chun is the head of the AIIB. He recently said the United States could still become a member. The administration of President Barack Obama decided against joining when the bank was set up in 2015. Jacob Kierkegaard is with the Peterson Institute of International Economics, based in Washington, D.C. Kierkegaard said, "Setting up AIIB and showing that Beijing intends to play by the established rules has helped China." However, he added that the development banks are helpful mostly for diplomatic or political reasons. He said they will not help China in economic competition with American businesses. Julian Evans Pritchard is an economist for the research company Capital Economics. He says China has gained in terms of soft power because it could bring several European powers on the table through AIIB. This could increase cooperation between China and European countries, he adds. The AIIB most recently approved a loan to build the Trans-Anatolian Gas Pipeline. The pipeline will transport natural gas from Azerbaijan to Europe. The project would support China's One Belt, One Road plan to connect Europe through Central Asia. Speaking to Chinese media, AIIB head Jin suggested that the administration of U.S. President Donald Trump may choose to join the bank. "I was told that many in his team have an opinion that Obama was not right not to join the AIIB, especially after Canada joined, which was a very loud endorsement of the bank." The Trump administration has yet to comment on the AIIB. Some observers do not believe the United States is likely to join. They say such a move would give added credibility to the bank. Jean said that, at first, the U.S. government resisted the AIIB because it appeared to be in competition with established banks like the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund. Lourdes S. Casanova is with the Emerging Markets Institute at Cornell University in New York. She says the United States will not join because of the importance of investments in public works projects domestically. She also says the U.S. has been critical of multilateral organizations. In the past year, the AIIB has lent $1.7 billion for 9 projects. They include roads in Tajikistan and Pakistan, a hydropower project in Pakistan, and a port in Oman. However, experts note that all these projects have been studied and approved by the World Bank and Asian Development Bank. The problems, they say, will come when the AIIB must identify good projects on its own. Evans Pritchard says many projects are not good investments. Local opposition to some projects could be another problem, he notes. There is a risk of running protests in several countries where projects are planned, he says. There is a protest against an industrial zone in Sri Lanka, which is part of the OBOR program. The One Belt, One Road, or OBOR program, may also face opposition from protectionist governments in Europe. They may be less willing to increase economic ties with other countries. I'm Mario Ritter.
The president of Turkmenistan won re-election with nearly 98% of the votes, the country's election commission reported. President Gurbanguly Berdimuhamedov was elected to a third term, which will last for 7 years. He was first elected president in 2006. The election results were announced Sunday night by the Central Asian Nations Election Commission. The commission said 97% of eligible voters turned out to vote. Berdimuhamedov is a dentist by trade. He has kept almost total control over the former Soviet Republic of 5.3 million people. He replaced Supemurat Niyazov as president following his death in 2006. Berdimuhamedov has largely kept in place Niyazov's repressive political system. The country blocks most political opposition and public protest. Early in his presidency, Berdimuhamedov ordered some reforms. He brought back foreign languages to schools and expanded required schooling from 9 years to 12 years. He reopened hospitals closed down by former President Niyazov. Berdimuhamedov also canceled some of Niyazov's unusual rules, such as bans against opera and gold teeth. Turkmenistan's official news organization reported that international observers found only minor voting problems, which did not affect the election results. But Radio Free Europe Radio Liberty reported that 2 days before the election, students were filling in ballots in favor of Bernie Makhmetov. The ballots were put in ballot boxes for people who did not show up to vote, according to a person at the school. Independent election monitors have not declared any of Turkmenistan's elections free or fair since the country gained independence after the collapse of the Soviet Union in 1991. 8 candidates ran against Bernie Makhmetov, but all were mostly unknown and their campaigns received little attention from the government-run news service. Michelle Romanowski is with the German Marshall Fund. He said, "Every election in the past 25 years has been rigged and there is no real opposition in the country." He added that independent news reporting is mostly unavailable to Turkmenistan residents. Bernie Makhmetov is known in Turkmenistan as Arkadag, which means the protector in English. But he has not been able to keep his country's economy strong. It has been hurt by low global energy prices. According to Radio Free Europe Radio Liberty, many government employees are not being paid on time. Shortages are reported for products such as cooking oil, sugar, and medicine. This has led to large price increases paid by Turkmenistan residents. During the election, the government ordered private traders to lower food prices, according to merchants and residents. On Monday, Vladimir Putin congratulated the re-elected Turkmenistan president. He said, "The election's outcome confirms your high level of political influence, wide recognition for all you have accomplished while in office as president, and support for your policy of continued efforts to strengthen Turkmenistan's economy and raise living standards."
Forget the chocolates, flowers, and jewelry. This Valentine's Day, February 14th, perhaps the best gift you can give the love of your life is your undivided attention. Sadly, for many of us, that is easier said than done. An international study of more than 13,000 adults found that many people say modern technology has affected relations with their partner. Almost 40% of those questioned said their partner paid more attention to their mobile device than to them. Intel Security Group, a private company, paid for the study. It examined how romantic relationships are affected by a person's use of social media and the internet. The research included both old and new relationships. 33% of those asked reported that they had to compete against a mobile device for attention on a first date. Apparently, we have as much love for our digital devices as for the people we love. Intel's survey found that adults spend almost equal amounts of time online at home as they do interacting directly. And a lot of married couples, friends, and family members argue about time spent on mobile devices. Gary Davis is the Chief Consumer Security Officer at Intel Security. He says recognition of our electronic device involvement is important.
But if you have a pattern where you're at dinner, you're out on a date, you're home having a quiet evening, maybe watching a show or just enjoying a fire or something like that, and then the next thing you know, a device comes into play, and it just it's that awkward thing that I don't think enough people think about, and when they don't think about it, they don't understand the kind of wear and tear it's causing on the relationship.
Edward Spector holds a similar opinion.
We're not thoughtfully progressing in terms of how we're using technology. We're often just sort of winging it.
Spector works as a psychologist in Bethesda, Maryland. He studies human behavior and specializes in technology dependence.
So we have to be thoughtful about what are the consequences of, you know, connecting to a particular social network or allowing yourself to have the habit of the last hour and a half of your evening be checking your Facebook or always responding to a text immediately or having all of the notifications on and buzzing on your phone.
Rules or time limits on a device might be good in theory. However, Intel's survey found that 45% of those questioned do not set rules. Another 45% said they got into arguments about how much they are on their phones when spending time with loved ones. The lack of social rules about digital behavior might be the result of the newness of the issue. Past generations did not have the technologies, said psychologist Spector.
In this situation, our elders know nothing. In fact, like the knowledge and competence is moving toward the youngest generation that's using the technology because they're the ones who are bounding forward fearlessly and finding out what ways you can get in trouble.
That trouble may include the sharing of sensitive information. Intel's research found nearly 30% of couples share passwords to social media sites. This could be a problem when relationships end. Intel's Gary Davis advises that people step away from electronic devices to truly connect with other people.
Understand the value of distancing yourself from your device and allow yourself to be engaged with that person that means the most to you.
I'm Katie Weaver.
The British singer Adele was the big winner at the 59th Grammy Awards in Los Angeles Sunday night. Adele won three major awards, Album of the Year for 25, as well as Record of the Year and Song of the Year for the single Hello. Beyoncé was among the competition for all three Grammys. Adele expressed shock that she received the honors over Beyoncé. "My dream and my idol is Queen Bee, and I adore you," she said. "You move my soul every single day, and you have done for 17 years." Adele also won awards for the Best Popular Performance by a Single Artist and Best Pop Vocal Album. Earlier in the show, Beyoncé gave a performance that recognized mothers everywhere. The singer, who is pregnant with two babies, won the award for Best Urban Contemporary Album for Lemonade. The Grammy Awards show is the biggest night of the year for the American music industry. Chance the Rapper won 3 Grammys, including Best New Artist. He did this without selling a single record or music download. The 23-year-old hip-hop artist releases his music only through streaming. David Bowie won Grammys for Best Rock Performance and Best Rock Song for his recording of Black Star. The singer died in January 2016. Solange Knowles, Beyoncé's little sister, won the Grammy for the Best Rhythm and Blues Performance for Cranes in the Sky. And Maren Morris won the Best Country Song Performance for My Church. Hours before the awards ceremony came news that American singer Al Jarreau had died at a Los Angeles hospital. No cause of death was given. He was 76 years old. Jarreau had won 7 Grammy Awards himself over the years. He was admitted to the hospital last week for what doctors described as exhaustion. Jarreau was considered one of jazz's greatest singers. His hits included We're in This Love Together, After All, and Moonlighting. I'm Dorothy Gundy.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Health and Lifestyle Report. In the United States, February 14th is Valentine's Day, a day to celebrate lovers and loving relationships. Images of red hearts are everywhere. Lovers say nice things to each other like, I love you with all my heart, or I love you heart and soul. After all, many cultures view a big, beautiful red heart as the traditional sign of love. But maybe it shouldn't be. Maybe the symbol of love should be a big, soft, gray brain. As it turns out, love is more an activity of the brain than an affair of the heart. Over the years, research has shown that love affects the brain in many ways and in a number of areas. Psychology Today magazine's online blog looked at some studies and noted the results. The blog explains that researchers generally use a technology called functional magnetic resonance imaging, or fMRI, to study the brain. This technology can follow movement of blood inside the brain. When a thought, substance, movement, or anything else activates a part of the brain, blood flow to that area increases. So, fMRIs can identify both the exact location in the brain and the amount of blood. The magazine reports that these love studies note something similar, that a brain on love looks a lot like a brain on drugs. In 2010, researchers at Syracuse University in New York State worked with other scientists in West Virginia and Switzerland. Syracuse professor Stephanie Ortigue led this study. Ortigue and her team found that falling in love created the same euphoric feelings as using cocaine. They found that 12 areas of the brain work in tandem to release euphoric-inducing chemicals such as dopamine, oxytocin, and adrenaline. When we are smitten with someone, chemicals such as adrenaline make our face turn red, our hands sweat, and our heart beat faster. The website health.com describes dopamine as the brain's pleasure chemical. It activates the reward circuit in our brain and plays a role in drug addiction and falling in love. Dopamine makes lovers feel happy and energetic about each other. Oxytocin is known as the love hormone because it deepens feelings of attachment. Oxytocin is the hormone that plays a role during pregnancy, nursing, and in mother-baby attachment. Ortigue's team also found that falling in love affected intellectual areas of the brain, and not just the pleasure and reward center of the brain, where drug habits may begin. As a side note, they also found that falling in love takes about a fifth of a second. In 2012, researchers at Concordia University in Canada, with teams in Switzerland and the United States, looked at sexual desire, or lust, and long-term attachment, or love, more closely. They wanted to know if lust and love affected the brain differently. The researchers of this study asked the study subjects to look at sexy, erotic pictures of strangers and photographs of loved ones. Then the researchers recorded their brain activity with fMRIs. They found that love and lust activate specific but related areas of the brain. What they found, for the most part, is that sexual desire and love seem to affect two parts of the brain the most, the insula and the striatum. It's no surprise that they found these are also parts of the brain most often affected by drug use. But now let's get back to lust versus love. Lustful sexual desires begin in the pleasure center of the striatum. As these feelings develop into attachment love, they appear to still be processed in the striatum, but in a different area. This area is activated by love, and it is involved in the process of giving value to things that give us pleasure, like food, sex, and drugs. Jim Faus of Concordia was the lead writer of a report on that study. He told Psychology Today that love is actually a habit that is formed from sexual desire, as desire is rewarded. It works the same way in the brain as when people become addicted to drugs. So, if you celebrate Valentine's Day, remember that your feelings of love are really a complicated chemical reaction happening in your brain, which, if you like science, is actually kind of sexy. However, if your partner isn't so scientifically minded, maybe keep the science to yourself and instead give them a gift of flowers or chocolate this Valentine's Day. And that's the Health and Lifestyle Report. I'm Ana Mateo.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.